right, it's episode 2 of Nagler's Never Right. We made it to a second episode. It's a miracle. How are you doing, everyone? Welcome back to Nagler's Never Right here at CheeseheadTV.com or at SoundCloud.com for the time being, because goodness knows CheeseheadTV.com is totally screwed up at the moment. We apologize in advance or in retrospect, whichever you prefer. Working on it diligently, Corey Behnke behind the scenes, making things happen. It's kind of like the Millennium Falcon. We've always said, it's like, you know, when Han reaches over and is ready to go into hyperspace and says, "Watch this." That's kind of Cheesehead TV in a nutshell. Sometimes, you know, it happens, the hyperdrive works, and the stars stream by you, and it looks amazing, and it works, and it's fun, and it's fabulous. Then other times, you hear the engine go, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa." And a voice beside you in the cockpit says, "Watch what?" We're kind of in the watch what period here at Cheesehead TV. So, throwing this up on SoundCloud for the time being, thank you so much to everyone who checked out the first episode with Matt Bowen. Great feedback. Thank you. Wow. I was kind of shocked, actually. Obviously, it's all about the quality of the guests. None of you here are here specifically to listen to me. Probably want to hear other people talk. So let's do that. Let's talk to some people. I love LA. All right, now we're joined by Kevin Acey from UT San Diego. Obviously, everyone talking about the column. Time to trade Rivers if Mariota is the man. And there's a lot to parse here, Kevin. Thanks a lot, first of all, for jumping on such short notice.
Thanks for having me.
Obviously, lots of conversation around this column. And you know, let's just dive right into it. Obviously, a lot of speculation centers around the franchise's potential move to Los Angeles. You know Philip Rivers very well. You've not only covered him, but you worked with him last year on a charitable endeavor. Why exactly does it seem that he would be so reticent to make the move to L.A. if the franchise is headed there?
It's just not his scene. I mean, I want to make sure that people understand, too. I mean, at least as far as we here in San Diego are concerned. And Philip Rivers, who's from the South, a small town in the South, is a Southern boy. He has married to a school sweetheart. They have 7 kids. He has adapted to San Diego and become a San Diegan. A small, big town is what San Diego is, or a big, small town.
Right.
And the part that they live in, they've been able to make a life for themselves there. And as far as we're concerned in San Diego, because people from the other part of the country, they talk about, well, what's the big deal? L.A. is an hour and a half away. Well, not to us. To us, it might as well be on the other side of the moon. because it's L.A., okay? And so it's just a big deal. Philip envisioned, not that Philip's a guy, and he's a guy who personifies faith, family, football. He puts a lot of stock in. And what's God telling him? What does he and his wife think? What does he and the wife and the kids think? So I don't want to say that he's got his whole life mapped out, but he kind of had a plan that he would retire a Charger in San Diego and the family would then move back home, basically. Well, that didn't include moving the family up to Los Angeles, because Philip has in his mind 4, 5, 6 years left.
Right.
So we're talking about 4 or 5 years in Los Angeles in a really kind of unsettled situation. And that's just not something that appeals to him. Again, I want to make sure that I'm clear. I'm not speaking for Philip. Done a lot of research, talked to Philip, talked to people around him, and have done it over the course of months, really. So it's just my take on the situation.
Right. And speaking of the situation, a big part of this would have to entail the Chargers being sold on Marcus Mariota, if that is indeed, the idea of getting up there to number 2. Telesco, he holds a lot of these cards here. You've got the franchise tag, sitting there, and I find it hard. You mentioned, he does have a great big family that he's got to take care of. I find it hard to think that he would, as I think you kind of suggest towards the end of your column, hang it up and go coach high school football. If $20 million is sitting out there, that can help his family for a good long while. Do you really think
Sure.
he'd go that far?
Sure. It is hard to believe. Just, I mean, there's a lot of things that are hard to get your arms around on this whole thing. I have covered sports for 25 years. Most of that, I would say, are professional sports. Been a beat writer in baseball and football. I've gathered a big catalog of guys that I've gotten to know and covered. I've never known anyone like Philip Rivers. Eric Weddle's pretty close, so I'm fortunate there's two guys on the Chargers. But
right.
Never known anyone like him, okay? He's just a different guy who is addicted to the truth, really. He doesn't say bad words and he doesn't say lies. He's not posturing here. He loves football. I mean, loves it. That's a huge part of his leadership. I believe this. I believe that Philip could walk away and be very happy. You talk about $20 million. Look, Philip wants to be paid. He wasn't going to, you know, play here for the minimum or play, you know, anywhere for the minimum or something. But let me tell you something. Tiffany Rivers just got rid of the minivan a couple years ago. All right? Philip drives an F-250. Not to give Ford the plug here, but you know, this big old truck.
Don't worry, Kevin. You know, we have no rival car sponsors on this podcast. It's quite all right.
This is who they are. They're not a family. They might be the only people that I know of. I mean, not that I have a big bank of multimillionaires, but he has $100 million in the bank. I'm almost positive of it, and they don't use nannies. You know, I'm not saying they never have, but that's just not how they live. They take care of the family themselves. This is a different human being, and I think people need to understand that. And I understand the doubt, but if they're going to doubt it, and I'm not guaranteeing anything, but they're going to doubt it, then they just need to understand who Philip Rivers is.
Right, and be prepared to be surprised, potentially.
Uh-huh.
Looking at it from the Chargers' point of view, let's say this does happen. I mean, let's say the stars align and Philip ends up in Tennessee, and, you know, they've got Marcus Mariota sitting there. I think Telesco and McCoy have done a really good job of positioning the roster to be competitive right now, and I think Marcus Mariota could be a very good quarterback down the road. But how do you sell this in the locker room where you go from a team that could potentially, if the car, you know, if things fall right, the draft goes right, I definitely think they could be in the mix to, you know, maybe get to the Super Bowl. You go from that to starting a rookie QB who, again, the potential is there, but it's hard to think they have much of a shot with Mariota under center in 2015.
Interesting situation here in San Diego. For so long, when Ladainian Tomlinson was here, Sean Merriman, Jamal Williams, I mean, this was, obviously that they had that tag of the most talented team by a lot of people. And we bought that here in San Diego a lot. Well, here, I'm hearing all these positive things about the Chargers now. And from inside the locker room, and also myself and others here, we don't really think the team's that close. Now, no question, they are better with Philip Rivers. I have long said no Philip Rivers team is going to win fewer than 7 games. Now, whatever you think that statement means, that's not playoff material. What I'm saying is there are teams that lose 14 games almost every year, right? There are teams that give up. At the end, the players aren't interested. They're waiting for the season to be over. Not a Philip Rivers led team. It's not going to happen. And he makes players around him better. You're absolutely right. 2015, they probably won't be as good. But we don't know what's going to happen in the draft.
Right.
We don't know what they're going to do after June 1st. And that goes with Philip or without Philip. So I'm not making any predictions about this season yet. I'm just saying, you know what? If you're talking long term, all I'm doing is suggesting that I think it's good that they're being proactive and doing their due diligence on Marcus Mariota.
Right.
And I just think that now is the time. And I also just want to make sure that people know it. They'll be irresponsible if they don't realize the possibility that after 2015, Philip, is not going to be a Charger.
We're talking to UT San Diego's Kevin Acey. Great column yesterday on the time to trade Philip Rivers being now. Obviously, as we said on the top, a big part of this, hanging over all of this, is the Chargers possibly moving to Los Angeles. As someone who is obviously following every development very closely, where do you put the Chargers' chances of playing in L.A. in 2016 or 2017?
It's not a good outlook. All right, the stance that I've taken as a guy who's kind of followed this closely, and back to the point where when I was talking about LA being a reality, people were just absolutely killing me. Oh, that's stupid. It's never going to happen. look, there's no way to tell. I'm very wary of killing the momentum and the hopes of the people in San Diego. There isn't a lot to be optimistic about them staying. And right. Number one among those is that the Chargers are optimistic about what's happening here. Now, we don't know. There are so many different permutations of what could happen in Los Angeles, and then you throw in St. Louis, Oakland, San Diego. But what's happening here right now is not getting it done. Now, finally, San Diego is doing something after all these years of not doing anything, and I've been very impressed with what they've done. Just the hurdles that they're up against in this short time, I just don't think it's going to happen. So that's for real, and everyone in that organization knows it. Players, well, maybe not every player, but the players that, you know, were thinking about being here long term, front office people, everybody knows about that. It is a possibility, if not a likelihood, they're in LA 2016, maybe 17.
Yeah, someone who, you know, one of my favorite players growing up, Dan Fouts. I mean, it's intrinsically, you know, intertwined with San Diego, that team. And to see them, you know, down the road would be a jolt, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm same with you, man. I grew up here. So it's huge. And you know what? Look, I'm not going to close the door on Phillips Rivers playing there. It's just I'm not playing around here. Either I wouldn't do that, not with how highly I think of Philip. This is it's a for real story.
Oh, absolutely, and you've definitely thrown a big log on the fire that is the rumbling of Philip Rivers possibly being traded. All right, Kevin, thank you so much for joining me. You're a real sport to hop on such short notice. Thanks a lot, and keep up the great work.
My pleasure. You keep up the great work as well.
I'll do what I can. Thanks a lot, Kevin. So that's Kevin Acey, UT San Diego, dropping knowledge about Philip Rivers and possible movements around the country, if you will. The other thing I wanted to talk a little bit about was Rex Ryan. Rex in effects. Jenny Ventress, MMQB.com, did a great job profiling kind of the rebooting of Rex Ryan, if you will, up there in Buffalo. If you haven't checked it out, make sure you get to the MMQB.com, check out her article. It's very extensive, very well-researched, detailed, nuanced, lots of great information in there, some of which I wanted to talk to her about, so I gave her a ring. That's what kind of the advantage is of having colleagues who do amazing work. Jenny and I have worked, you know, together a couple times here at Sports Illustrated, thought it'd be great to give her a call and talk to her a little bit about what she found when she went up to Buffalo for a week last week.
Buffalo soldier, dreadlock rasta. It was a Buffalo soldier in the heart of America.
All right, joining me from the MMQB, the dot, and the com, it's Jenny Vrentis. Jenny, how the hell are you today?
Great. Loving it. Things in New York right now. Great spring weather. I'm in a great mood.
All right. Well, I caught you on a good day. That's good. I'm glad I didn't catch you when it was raining and you were miserable. So let's dive right into this Rex expose, Rex in effects. How long were you up in Buffalo getting this done?
I was in Buffalo all last week. So I got there Monday and I left right after Rex threw out the first pitch of the Bisons game on Thursday.
Right, right. So, very good.
Yeah, a little low and outside, but, you know, hey, he promised a two-seam fastball and didn't deliver, so I'm sure Bills fans are hoping the Super Bowl promises don't go the same direction.
I was going to say, Jets fans can tell you about promises that aren't delivered there from old Rexy. I loved the article. That's why I contacted you right after I read it and wanted to get you on here because I really wanted to get your take on the whole aspect. I love this whole, it's just a brooding pie of inner divisional kind of incestuous, like, you know, Jets fans are kind of divided in that they're happy that Rex is doing well, but then there's this whole faction of Jets fans that really hate everything he's saying in that article. What is your sense talking to him over this kind of week of his relationship with New York, not just the fans, but the media and the whole kind of city in general?
My biggest takeaway was that he had a side of the story that he felt like he wanted to get out there. I think he wanted people to know what happened at the end of his time in New York. And I think he sort of probably wrestled with it a little bit because obviously Woody Johnson gave him his first head coaching opportunity. And I really feel like early on, it seemed like this great fit. You know, Rex's personality was perfect for New York. They go to AFC championship games. You know, the owner loves Rex. They looked like they were building this great thing together. And at a certain point, you know, it started to slip away from him. And I think Rex felt like the last 2 years he couldn't be competitive, and he felt like that wasn't all on him. And I think he wanted to share that because I think he felt like he was being judged for the last two seasons without having shared fully exactly what went on behind the scenes.
Well, to that point, I found it really interesting, the tidbits about, you know, the coaching staff being frustrated in that they had lobbied strongly for the team to go after DeSean Jackson when he was available, and for drafting, you know, wanting them to draft Martavis Bryant. Again, pounding the table for this kid. Neither of which obviously happened, and they were left with kind of dregs at the offensive skill positions. You go on and you watch DeSean Jackson have a pretty productive year in Washington, and then Martavis Bryant scoring all sorts of touchdowns there in Pittsburgh. I found what you're talking about there to be pretty prevalent in that, like, hey, hold on here. You know, I was left holding the bag, and I get that sense from a lot of people, not just in New York, but around the NFL, people that kind of really watched his tenure there in New York. He did get kind of hung high and dry. Do you think it was a mistake that final year in New York? Because obviously you talk about the last 2 years. To me, it was last year that bringing him back kind of, it's not really a lame duck season, I suppose, but for all intents and purposes, they brought him back for 1 year with a GM who didn't pick him. Was that the biggest mistake Woody Johnson made, do you think?
I do. And I think what Rex was trying to convey by saying, you know, I think Woody Johnson wanted me to be his coach for 100 years, but then once they had that 4-12 record last year, I think Rex was trying to convey that maybe Woody didn't really understand what was going on. But the reality of it is that they had a GM who felt like he was on a different timetable than Rex. He felt like he had a couple years to build this. And Rex was on a very short timetable. It was year to year. He needed to have results. So that was one huge reason why it was, you know, a bad arranged marriage. But the problem was, you know, Idzik ended up being on the Heat. He wasn't going to get more time. And I think that last year, I really think that last year sealed it, because a couple of quotes that, you know, obviously can't get everything in the story, but someone said to me, it was either, I think Dennis Thurman said to me, you know, that first year, fine, like, we get it. You're getting out of cap hell, you're fixing it. But then to do it again in year two, like, where you're not spending on players and there's clear holes on the roster and there are easy, attainable ways to fix them, I think that's when the coaching staff really got frustrated. Also, Rex gets that contract extension in the locker room in Miami. The assistant coaches find out a few weeks later that almost all of them were on one-year deals, including Dennis Thurman, his right-hand man, his defensive coordinator. And so, you know, at that point, I think it was sort of Rex agreed to the contract extension, but he kind of felt like, my guys will be taken care of. And then when they weren't, then everyone was like, shoot, we're out the door, but we're still here. And they're just, it was, so yeah, that, I mean, it's really kind of a shame, you know, in the NFL to see a wasted season, right? But it was very clear that they felt like that was a wasted season.
Well, to the point where, and I don't know if this had been out there already, this is the first I had read about it, that you got out of Rex, that he bought a house in Tennessee last summer just on the, you know, chance that he was going to get fired. He felt like there was a good possibility he was going to get fired. And the fact that he went to the lengths of buying a home someplace else so you would have a place to live, that was pretty telling.
Yeah, people always say, right, real estate speaks louder than anything else. Like, I remember covering free agency as a beat writer. Whatever players did with their homes, you knew that signaled their intentions. So when he said he bought a house in Nashville in the summer, you know, I knew that he was, he really felt these things he said, because you're always wary, right? A guy's looking back, you don't want it to be revisionist history. So I wanted to make sure that all the things you're referencing actually happened, you know, the branding meeting, where he felt like they were moving away from him, someone on the road saying, we're not spending money in 2014 because we're hiring a new head coach. I checked out all of those, and all of those things happened, and Rex did buy a house in June in Nashville. So people might question his timeline and is it revisionist history, but the reality is the steps along the process that he's laying out all happened.
We're talking to Jenny Vrentis from the MMQB.com. Jenny, looking forward now, obviously, Jets episode is in the rearview mirror. Lots of, you know, as there tends to be when Rex comes to a new place, lots of hope now, lots of excitement. I think Thurman Thomas put it perfectly, though, in that the video companion piece you did along with the article on the site. Thurman Thomas kind of almost right up front says, okay, now it's time to win. I mean, you know, the honeymoon will be short, undoubtedly, especially this is a team that whooped up on Rex's Jets last year. How long do you think the leash is here in upstate New York?
You're right, because it's sort of hard to know, because these are Bills fans who have not been to the playoffs in 15 years, but yet they root for their team every year. So, and on one sense, they're, you know, the ultimate optimist. But then on the other sense, you know, there's a new coach every 3 years or less. So they're constantly, you know, going through this cycling through of trying to find something better. I mean, my thought is, you know, Rex needs to do something this year to show that he can compete and contend. I don't know that this year's roster is going to be, you know, a magic roster to necessarily, you know, I think they think they can make the playoffs. I think, you know, obviously your first year in, the quarterback situation is kind of confusing. I mean, I say Rex has 2 years to deliver on a playoff promise. That's what I would say.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable to me. When you're writing a 3,000-plus word, kind of very involved, a lot of detail in this excellent article, to have it reduced to the Jay Samaro, Rex Ryan back and forth, I mean, that was the social headline coming out of it. And we know everything is driven by social these days. I mean, to have it kind of reduced to that, is that frustrating as a reporter and as a writer?
Totally. That is a great question, because you understand it is, because that was, to me, I added that to my list of questions at the end. I figured I'd ask it toward the end of the interview, and we're sitting down at the Big Tree Inn having, before Thurman Thomas and Jim Kelly got there, we were just sitting in the back of the bar doing an interview, and the Jason Morrow stuff was, I mentioned it to him at the end, but I get it. That's a sexy headline. It's something that's going to happen this year. It's going to add some juice to the Bills-Jets rivalry. I think, you know, there was probably a little bit of an underlying sense there that, you know, I didn't really have a chance to get into, but I think Rex felt like he was the guy who lobbied for Amaro last year privately behind the scenes. I don't know that feeling was shared, you know, among everyone that worked with him, but Rex was like, let's give this guy a chance. Like, I want to make sure he gets every opportunity to contribute to the team. So I think that contributed to some of his frustration, because he's thinking, I went to bat for this guy.
Right.
And then the first chance he gets, you know,
it's slighting
he's
him,
criticizing
right.
the way. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, it'll be, like you say, it'll make Bills Jets weeks even more juicy. Well, we've talked to Jenny Vrentis from the MMQB.com here on Nagler's Never Right. Jenny, thank you so much. You're an absolute legend. Go outside and enjoy whatever, you know, time in this beautiful weather that you can today.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Talk to you soon. So I hope that's enough NFL talk for everyone. You know, heck, that's how we roll here. We talk to people out on the West Coast. We talk to people out on the East Coast. You know, who knows? You play your cards right, Midwest, maybe you'll be next. Thank you so much again to everyone for downloading the podcast, for listening to it on SoundCloud while we figure out what the heck is up with Cheesehead TV. Seriously, though, you're all fantastic. The feedback on Twitter was amazing off of episode 1. Tell your friends, tell your family, Nagler's never right. Episode 2 available right now. More to come. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.